Crafting Your Own Story. Many of us have more time on our hands these days, more time with our thoughts, more time to contemplate. For some, it's an ideal time to slow down and capture memories and wisdom of a lifetime, to finally put one's life story on paper for posterity. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we get some guidance from three Maine authors who have some experience with nonfiction, memoir, and fiction writing. We'll discuss tips for how to get started, prompts that might unlock forgotten memories, and guidance on taming the beast as it grows. We'll also hear about their latest projects and books that reflect our times. Stay with us for a conversation with Monica Wood, Genevieve Morgan, and Meredith Hall. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. For Maine Public Radio, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Your story matters. Everyone's does. Unfortunately, most stories are lost to time, but during this pandemic, some people are taking advantage of the change of pace and newfound solitude to write their life story, their memoir. Today, we're going to get some tips on how to do it well, or at least without tearing your hair out. Our guests are three authors. Meredith Hall is the author of the New York Times bestseller, Without a Map. Her new novel, Beneficence, comes out soon and is receiving great early reviews, and we'll talk about it a little later in the program. Monica Wood is a novelist, memoirist, and playwright. Her books include When We Were the Kennedys and One in a Million Boy and Ernie's Ark. Genevieve Morgan is a writer and editor. Her latest book is The Kinfolk. It is the final installment of an adventure fantasy for 18 to 14-year-olds called The Five Stones Trilogy. She is also the author of Undecided, Navigating Life and Learning After High School. And as always, we want to hear from you. This program is for you. Are you trying to write something down right now? Are you looking for guidance, looking for inspiration? Please send us a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all three of you. What a treat on this beautiful summer Friday. Monica, I'm going to start with you. I'm going to pretend I'm sitting here in my home meaning to write something, remembering something I think would be important to write about, and I don't even know how to start. Give me some advice. How do I start?
Well, thank you for having us all on. I'm a big fan of both of the other panelists today. I wish I could see them in person. Well, I'd start small, and so what I just advised a friend of mine who's trying to write something, I said, well, start with just a word list. Like, just write 100 words that you think are going to have to be in your book. So they could be places, they could be names, they could be little trigger words that remind you of an event or a scene or something like that. I think starting small, just to make it as not daunting as you can, is the best way that I have always found.
All right. Would you have another tip, or would you mimic that, Genevieve? What do you do to get started?
Well, that's a good question, because I want to say thank you all for having me on and with these lovely, lovely other authors. It's a joy to be a part of this. But I often have to restart the process. And one of the things a lot of writers talk about doing the pages, 3 pages a day, and you have to exercise the muscle a little bit. But when you're just getting started, it's a little bit like Couch to 5K, which I also just downloaded on my phone. And I find I'll go pick up a book from my bookshelf and open it up to a page and pick a word out of there. Like, let's say it's valley. And then I will try to write 3 pages of something based on that word. Now, it could be a memory. It could be fiction. It could be just anything. I don't try to limit myself. Just whatever visions and images that word conjures for me, I write it down. And I try to do that every day until I I get a little more lubricated, if you want to use that word.
Genevieve, I love that analogy. And for those of our listeners who don't know what Couch to 5K is, I actually did this about a decade ago with a friend. It's a program that you start by mainly walking and running a little. And every day you add a little more running and a little less walking until you can run a 5K. That's a great analogy. Meredith, bringing you into the conversation, what do you say to someone who's trying to, I know that you have just, your book is really based on your town and your life and your most recent book, Beneficence. How do you start to get your head around writing one's own, something so personal?
Well, I think that, hello, everybody. This is such a pleasure to be able to sit around with writers and talk writing, so thank you. I think that there are stories that all of us carry that are, they call to us constantly, even if we're not aware of it. They are memory. And so one of the things I did when I wrote Without a Map was to actually make a list. And I'm not a, I don't make any kind of outline when I work, but the list was very helpful to me. It simply was, what stories do I want to tell? And it was an ongoing list. It changed. Sometimes I would return to the list and think, what was that? I don't even remember what I was talking about when I put it on the list. But often the things that most catch our effort to understand the life are there circling around inside us constantly. And so I taught writing at the University of New Hampshire for many years, and I had a colleague, Charles Simic, who's a poet. Mm-hmm. And he was also a wonderful essayist, and he wrote an essay called something about reading philosophy at night. And I'm paraphrasing, but he says that making meaning is the matter of my existence. I circle my obsessive images constantly. And so I think a wonderful exercise when we look back on our lives is to make a list of those obsessive images and allow it to be a flexible list. Some things will come off, some things will come on. And then when you want to sit down and write, look at that list and say, oh, there was a time when my brother... And you start there. That's your story. That's where you start writing that day.
Not to put you on the spot, but can you think of a time when an image you jotted down turned into a significant part of your story or one of your books?
Yes. I actually was unaware how many times the image of water or moving water showed up on that list. And it was only in a context. It only was background to something. But as I started writing, I started to understand how significant water is in my life and in my stories. And so it's possible that you make a list simply of specific images that it may be, you know, the light coming through a window that is so persistent for you.
Monica, some things are easier to remember than others. Do you have tricks to help yourself be able to remember things when there's sort of whole sections of your memory that seem to be gone?
Well, I want to add just a little thing to getting started and all that stuff. I would ask people who are trying to write their life story right now or some kind of a, you know, nonfiction memoir kind of thing to stop telling yourself that nobody's going to want to read it or nobody will be interested in this story, because that is crippling, and that's just a fancy way of saying writer's block, honestly. But I think anybody who's ever written a family story has felt that way. Like, what makes me so special? Why would anybody want to read about my family or my experience? But if writing my memoir taught me anything, it's that writing a family story, you are writing everybody's family story on some level, that everyone who reads it will find a door to open and feel welcomed and recognized.
All three of you have written about grief, have experienced grief. Most people have. Genevieve, how do you come up with the courage to write about the very hardest things?
Oh, gosh. I wish I knew. I think after I read Meredith's book, I kept thinking about that Ernest Hemingway quote, you know, the world breaks everyone. And afterwards, some are strong in the broken places, and those that don't break, it kills. And I feel like I think when I was writing the trilogy, I remember that if I felt moved enough by a scene to cry myself, I felt like maybe I was telling the truth, you know, like the real truth. And I felt like I would have to have it be 100 times more painful for me to then try to transcribe it onto the page so that it would move the reader even 10%, you know, because that's the hard part. You're trying to translate your own experience and then share it with the world so that it resonates with something that's very personal to them. And when you succeed, like I feel both Monica and Meredith have in their memoirs, it shatters the reader. It shatters you, you know, because there is no distance between their experience and yours. And it's just the universal human experience. And that is really what we're in, right? So writers just become the medium through which we can share our joy and our sorrow and our pain, because we all get broken in the end. And that is why writing is important. And I think that most of us here during this time, we're starting to understand that we need each other more than we need, you know, internet and electronics, and we need nature and we need each other. And that's what writers are always trying to, in some way, send, you know, from the very beginning. We're all on this journey together.
And Meredith, let me ask you about that. Grief is a huge element in Beneficence. How did you come up with the courage to write that?
Well, you know, I'd like to add to what Genevieve said. I think this effort to reach out to people, we're such storytelling animals, everybody, not just writers, everybody. We are all such storytelling animals. And I found writing my memoir that I told stories that I had never told anybody. I had never told my closest friends this story. And so when I decided that I was actually going to speak these stories out loud on the page, what I did, I didn't give any thought to it. It just happened, and it was actually quite a gift that it happened. I somehow conjured a very old woman, and she was like an old auntie, and she sat with me every day while I wrote my memoir, and I was talking to her. She listened. She was the first person who listened to that story, and she was all loving, all accepting, non-judgmental, tender, compassionate. And so I think imagining sort of our ideal listener is a way to actually dare to approach those kinds of griefs and to say, I'm going to tell you my innermost stories. Another thing that I'd like to say that has been fascinating to me, I've been very surprised by it. My fiction, Beneficence, is made up out of air. I made it up. It's not in any way that I recognized as I wrote about me or people I've known or circumstances I've known. But it's so interesting to me that in the end, because I think writers need to be honest, if we're going to write a story, we need to be honest about it. I feel so much more personally exposed in this fiction than I do in my memoir. I feel as if I am bared on the page, which has been an interesting experience.
Monica, I know that you've read Beneficence, and Genevieve, I'm going to give you all a few minutes to rave. I know it's not out to the public yet. You said September 15th, I know. Meredith, Monica, tell us about it.
Well, you know, as a larger issue, I think that what we don't talk about enough when we speak about the writing process is how essential reading is to that process. So I'm about 3/4 into a first draft of a new novel, and I'm in that stuck place where you have no idea what happens next. So the last couple of weeks, I took off for a reading pause, and I've just been reading book after book after book, which just fills me up and gives me energy to plow ahead in my own work. And one of the books I read was Beneficence, and I just, honestly, it's not because she's on the phone. This is easily the best novel I've read in 10 years. Her writing is sublime, and this family at the center of the book is a family that I feel like not only that I know, but that I've lived with and suffered with. It's beautiful. I also, I have to say, read another book that's kind of connected here. It's called Blue Summer by Jim Nichols. And Genevieve, you're his editor, aren't you, at Islandport Press?
Yes, I am. That's why I'm laughing, because, yes, I agree. There's something very similar. Yes.
Oh, it's just a lovely book. It's a short novel, and it's about this feckless horn player named Cal Shaw, this really likable guy, despite his epic flaws. And the thing I loved most about many things about this book, but it's the way Jim writes about music and about how it feels to make music. This guy's a trumpet player. It was so moving to me, and I think it's out now, so you could even get it today and have that experience. It was wonderful. And the one other thing I want to say, I haven't read the whole book, and I think Carrie's going to join us later, but it's a nonfiction book called Milltown by Carrie Arsenault, and I read an excerpt from it yesterday in Down East Magazine. And she's writing about Mexico, Maine, which is also my hometown, which is the town featured in When We Were the Kennedys. And I am so proud that she is also writing about a place I know so intimately and doing it so beautifully. Her writing is absolutely sublime.
You're right. Carrie is joining us later. I appreciate it. Let's get ahead of ourselves a little bit. I'm going to go back a little bit here and tell you that the reason I had the idea for this program is that my mother has been writing her life story. She said, I'm going to be cooped up during the pandemic, and I'm going to do this thing I've always intended to do. I think I had a feeling she's not alone, that so many stories are lost, that many people are trying to get their family stories down. And she's a good bit into it. But what kind of advice, Monica, would you give to someone who, you said you're 3/4 into a novel,
yeah,
you're a good bit into it, but boy, organizing something like this is probably a little more than a project than most people suspected, or sustaining the energy. So any advice you can give on those two fronts?
Well, there's two ways to write books like this. One is really kind of a life story that you're passing down to your grandkids, and you just don't want that story to be lost. And then there's the other that it's a little more artful. It's what we would call a memoir. And the only advice, and you know, you guys can weigh in on this too, is just to try to compress time as much as you can, that you don't need to write about every single year of your life. You kind of go to a turning point place in your life, like one summer where a big thing happened, or a section of years where that shaped the rest of your life, or something that you can look at more as almost like a novel, that it has a beginning, a middle, and an end in a confined period of time. And I find that when I give that kind of advice to people writing memoirs, it really kind of lets them off the hook. It suddenly doesn't feel like this big amorphous blob that you have to make art out of.
Genevieve, what to add to that?
Well, I have edited a number of memoirs for Island Court Press, including Wayfarer, which is Jim Rockefeller's memoir of, it's about just exactly what Monica said, sort of compressed time, but it's based around, you know, the four loves of his life. And then a number of different people, Deborah Joy Corey wrote a memoir called Settling Twice, which was very interesting because she went back and forth in time. So she was she bounced between her present and then going back. And we worked very hard on the structure of that memoir. But my experience not having written a memoir, because I think I'm still waiting, I feel like having read so many of other people's memoirs, exactly what Monica says, that it's not so much telling the story of your life, although that may be how you write the first draft, is you feel like you have to be, you know, more, get the timeline down and really stay true to your memories. But then to go back and you begin to, it's like what Jim did in Blue Summer, you kind of get the underpinnings, the backbeat, and you start to see that there's a larger theme here. Maybe it's like Jim, the four loves of his life, or maybe it's something else. But then you start to peel back the layers of the onion and start to really tell the story, which is, of course, going back again, making your personal story universal so other people can climb in. And those are the best. I always make a differentiation between the me-moir and the memoir. The me-moir is, you know, the one that loses people because it's just their own personal story, and there's no universal juice underneath it. But the memoir is a story that people can climb into, even if it is personal.
On that note, we do have to go to a break. This is Maine Calling. We're talking about writing your own life story and memoirs and books. It's 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post on our Facebook page. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Patriot Subaru, with a mission to serve customers, families, community, and each other. Learn more at patriotsubaru.com. The Dexter Group of Alex Brown Investment Advisory and Asset Management Services since 1995, in Portland and at thedextergroup.us. And Bristol Seafood's North Atlantic Shrimp, caught in the wild and available ready to eat in the freezer at your local Hannaford.
Really, nothing is so lovely as a quietly snoring dog and some evening Brahms as you sit in a comfortably overstuffed chair with your feet on the footstool.
This week on Selected Shorts, Old Dog from PRI, Public Radio International.
And that's coming up Sunday evening at 8 here on Maine Public Radio.
Next time on LA Theatre Works, a timeless story about the clash of generations in 19th century Russia.
Why are you being so difficult?
Perhaps I haven't the grace for aristocratic ladies like you.
Oh. You?
Oh, my God.
Alfred Molina, Harry Hamlin, and Joanne Whalley star in Fathers and Sons by Brian Friel from the novel by Ivan Turgenev. Next time on LA Theatre Works.
And that's Sunday evening at 9 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we're talking with Maine writers about how to tell your own story. And we're also going to hear a little bit about their work as well. Joining me, Genevieve Morgan, who is the author of Undecided, Navigating Life and Learning After High School, among other books. Meredith Hall is the New York Times bestselling author of Without a Map. Her soon-to-be-published novel is Beneficence, already getting incredible reviews. And Monica Wood, a novelist, memoirist, and playwright. A new edition of Ernie's Ark, The Abbott Falls Stories, comes out next month. We invite you to be part of the conversation. Email talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Calling in now, a name mentioned just a few minutes ago, Carrie Arsenault, who serves on the board of the National Book Critics Circle. She's also the author of the soon-to-be-released book Milltown, which is already getting great early reviews. And Carrie, thank you for joining us.
And your
Carrie, are you there? Wonderful. Yeah. Congratulations on Milltown. Tell us a little bit about it. Is it a memoir?
That's a good question. I think a lot of people want to call it a memoir, and some people are calling it a biography of a town. And then I think my agent and editor like investigative memoir. But I like the term, which is really complicated. It's autoethnographic investigation, which is way too much to say. It's almost as hard as saying National Book Critics Circle, right? 10 times that. But the dictionary definition of that is a scientist actually that said it about the book. Dr. Tom Davies in the UK. He's a geographer, I should say. The definition of it is a form of qualitative research in which the author uses, and there goes my computer, of course, in which the author uses self-reflection and writing to explore anecdotal and personal experience and connect this autobiographical story to wider cultural, political, social meanings and understandings.
Right. So your book is Mexico, Maine, in Mexico, Maine. And Monica has really put Mexico, Maine already on the map.
I
cannot wait to read this and learn more about your experience and what you've also to see. So you sort of have done some journalism as well as exploring your own life, I understand.
Yes, but first I have to say, Monica, I'm doing events with both Monica and Meredith for my book tour, and both of those books, well, When We Were the Kennedys, when I first read the first few pages of that book, I cried out loud. It was, and I was just starting mine in 2009. And, yeah, I the first few pages, I was reading it to my husband, I couldn't get through it. Aww. And then Meredith's too. I just started reading that. I'm halfway through, and it's just an incredible. It feels so relevant today because I feel like it's impossible to write today without addressing grief. And it just felt like so much grief in that book. But anyway, so as far as my book, but it's a complicated book. I probably took everything wonderful that Monica just said about a memoir having a beginning, middle, and end and not being an amorphous blob. That's kind of how my book started, was a big amorphous blob. And I had an editor try to help me figure out what that sort of narrative thrust was. And what we figured out, it was just, he took the plot and he put it on a separate piece of paper, and it was about 2 pages long. And he's like, this is what you do. You go home and then you come back and then you go home and you come back. It was just a series of leaving home constantly and then going back. And the subtitle of my book is Reckoning with What Remains. So I was basically going back and reckoning with home. Mm. And in doing that, and then going back, every time I went back, there was more sort of examination and investigation, like very personal, you know, looking at my family, looking at the town, the pollution, the mill, the other people that were in my life. And it was an amorphous blob, as Monica mentioned, until we got that sort of narrative point, that narrative arc, the back and forth.
Carrie, I think some people are probably hearing this and feeling a little relieved in a way to hear that you, a published author, started your book in 2009, that it took a long time, and they think, oh, maybe I'm not the only one.
Oh, no. And I probably even started earlier. I think I started doing family research in 2001, so maybe 20 years. Yeah, and I'm 53 years old, too, so it's also never too late. I went back and got my MFA just in 2013 on the GI Bill, and I graduated in 2015. So, yeah, it's not too late, and it takes a long time. It depends. I don't, this is less a memoir than more of an investigation, so that was part of the length of it, and not really knowing. I hadn't written much in 30 years either, so that was the other problem. I forgot how to write a little bit. I knew how to research.
Well, you certainly, this is Monica, Carrie, you certainly remembered how to write because the excerpts that I've read are so, really so beautiful. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, thank you. Really.
Well, Carrie, your mom for me, okay?
I will. I think she's listening right now, actually.
Hi, Maddie.
I have to say, Monica grew up right down the, like, I could probably throw a softball and hit her house from my house, but... We were different ages, so we didn't really know each other. Right. But
oh my goodness! Well,
like
thank
you,
Carrie. Carrie, congratulations, and thank you so much for calling in today. That's Carrie Arsenault. She's the author of the soon to be released book Milltown. Genevieve, you're in the publishing world. How come all these books are soon to be released? What is it about September?
I don't know. I mean, I think some of it might have been holding off for the COVID lockdown. You know, bookstores have been pretty overwhelmed and shut, and publishers have been reeling from everything. People haven't been at work.
Right.
I mean, they have. I mean, I know at Islandport, we've tried to do some different things, but, you know, everything slowed down this spring. I think that I was just doing a quick look at what's coming up, and it's going to be very interesting to see sort of pre-COVID and post-COVID and what's going to happen in the next 9 to 12 months with publishing. I know for myself, this novel that I was working on, which is, I think all of my books are about uncertainty on some level. I was like, oh, I don't need to write this book anymore because COVID basically did everything I wanted to do with the novel. So
oh
now
my
I'm
goodness.
Looking at this book that I started writing, you know, a year ago and thinking, oh my God, I don't think I need to write this anymore. So I'm wondering if we'll see a slew of books that come out this end of summer, fall, and then a whole new genre range. One of the books I was just looking at that I'm very excited to read is Jonathan Lethem's new book called The Arrest, which is about all this. It's sort of about if all the dystopian things we're so worried about were to happen, but it's actually a good thing. And I think we are all reading so much about grief, and we're all, you know, feeling everything is so tenuous. But it is possible that things might turn out okay in the end. And I just want to say that as someone who's written a book for teens trying to figure out what to do, and with all of our kids, you know, facing all of this uncertainty, certainly my 23 and 20-year-old are, that the world keeps spinning, and humans have been going through very hard times. And one of the ways that they make sense of things is what Monica and Meredith and Carrie, we tell stories to each other, and we share them, and we mm-hmm. bring them out into the world, and we show our resilience in that. And I think in Beneficence, this is such a perfect book to bring up at this time, because terrible things happen to this beautiful family, you know, terrible things that you could say on the universal are happening to all of us right now. Mm. And in the end, you know, there's mercy and there's forgiveness, and there, you know, suffering does not last forever. So, I think that that is one of the themes we might be seeing in future books based on all of our, you know, the world's global pandemic.
We're going to go to Jay. Yeah. Jay's calling from Portland. Hi, Jay. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you so much. I'm really enjoying the program today. I teach classes on how to write a legacy letter, and there's a lot of interest in that right now. It's not a full-length memoir, so it's not quite as daunting. It's usually just a few pages that allows folks to focus on their life lessons and their core values and offer guidance and blessings. It's a wonderful way to tell your story that may be less off-putting than a memoir. And I'm just wondering if your guests have some thoughts about that or some experience with writing a legacy letter.
Any of you three?
I love the whole legacy letter. Sounds so lovely, doesn't it? Just the alliteration. I mean, I don't know. I haven't written one, and I don't know anybody who has, but it feels like what you were talking about, Meredith, about thinking of one person as your recipient, you know,
yes,
imagining writing
occurs,
one person.
It occurs to me that I think one of the issues that people writing their lives, whether these, you know, whether we imagine ourselves as authors of a memoir or people wanting to pass stories down through the family, I think one of the issues that we have to face is, why am I doing this? And I think it's one of the first hurdles that we have to get over, is to say nobody wants to read about bitterness. Nobody wants to read about ongoing anger or condemnation or judgment. So as we sit down to write our stories, interestingly, because we have an audience, I think that we are the first step is to start to be the person that we believe we're writing on the page. So I think there's always a great deal of personal work that we do as we write our own stories. So the idea of a legacy letter, it seems to me, really sort of compresses that need. What is it that I want to say to my grandchildren and great-grandchildren? Bitter family stories and betrayals and griefs that aren't resolved. These aren't the stories that we want to pass on. We want to tell about those griefs and betrayals. But I think that we have an obligation to also say we find our way back to light and compassion and love, and that's the life story that I want to send out either to readers of a book or to grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
Beautiful, yeah.
Jay, thanks for your call. We'll go to Bass Harbor and Russ. Hi, Russ. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for taking the call. I really enjoy the program today, and it's appropriate. As I finally, I've been working on a memoir for years and years and years, and starts and stops, that kind of thing. And I finally found a way that I found a theme, and I'm so motivated. And it's just really exciting. So for the last 3 months, I've actually made a lot of progress, and it's been enjoyable. This is my first time doing this kind of thing. Technical writer for the federal government for years and years, but this is way different than technical writing, let me tell you. So anyway, finding a theme seemed to be a key for me. And now I'm motivated. I've got a lot of ideas. My question to your panel, though, is I almost feel like I have too much, you know, and when do you know that you have enough? When do I stop writing and start putting the work toward a finished product? Is that the job of an editor?
Well, Genevieve's an editor. What is it, your job at Genevieve, or is the author supposed to know when to stop?
Well, I mean, I think what Monica said in the beginning about how to look at what you've written and see that it has a narrative arc where there's a beginning, a middle, and an end. And if you don't know where the end is, you probably need to take the manuscript not to a professional publisher yet because it's not ready, but to a workshop or to a writing group who can work with you to winnow it and to tell you, yeah, you know, this is enough, or this is where you need to stop. And because, of course, like anything, my sons would say the latest Star Wars, I don't want to get everybody all upset, but, you know, like there is such a thing as things, there's goodness in things that end. unlike the Star Wars franchise, let's put it that way. That's what my sons would say. But, you know, that you have a beginning, middle, and end, and a story that really maybe leaves the reader wanting more as opposed to feeling overwritten. So that's my best advice, is not to go straight. It's not really an editor's job to do that at that point. Later on, if they decide to buy it, then it's their job to work with you to refine the story that you're handing in that they've bought. But for now, I would say workshop it or start a writing group or go to MWPA and look at any of their offerings, which they have a ton.
Right. And Russ, I should say that MWPA is the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. And if you go to their website, so many workshops and programs for writers. We do need to take another quick break. We'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Bristol Seafood, a Maine company whose mission is to make seafood America's favorite protein. Learn more at bristolseafood.com. Lincoln Academy, a welcoming community of day and residential high school students in the heart of coastal Maine, lincolnacademy.org. And Ocean View at Falmouth, an active retirement living campus, proudly supporting Saturday Afternoon Opera, which airs tomorrow on Maine Public Classical.
On August 21, 2016, the Patton Academy Boys High School basketball team that won the 1947 New England Class B Championship at the Boston Garden is inducted in the Maine Basketball Hall of Fame. Head coach Willis Fair, a former University of Maine player who also was Patton Academy's principal, took a team of 9 players from a school of 88 students, including just 29 boys, up against a big city opponent in Boston Latin with a student body of 1,800. Patton Academy defeated Boston Latin in overtime, 35-32 at the Boston Garden on March 22, 1947.
On This Day in Maine's History was created in partnership with the Maine Historical Society and made possible through the generous support of Roosevelt Campobello International Park and the Island Institute. Happy birthday, Maine! On the next Speaking in Maine, how we eat now.
When the news is terrible, cooking's numbers are up because people seek solace in food. They seek solace in the kitchen.
Join us for a discussion about the future of food in the United States, especially within the context of the COVID-19 pandemic. This program is from the 2020 College of the Atlantic Champlain Institute, whose theme is November 3rd, What's at Stake? That's Friday afternoon at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. My guest today, 3 amazing Maine authors, Meredith Hall, Monica Wood, and Genevieve Morgan. We're talking about how to tell your story and getting advice from them. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet @MaineCalling, or post to our Facebook page. We're going to go to Karen Rooks calling from Scarborough. My mom. Mom, so glad you called in. I know that my mother has been working on writing her life story for 5 months. So, Mom, at this point, do you have any advice for others or any questions for the guests?
Well, actually, listening to all these people, I guess I'm not writing a life story as much as I'm writing a travelogue through the adventure of my life, because there's no betrayal, no love, no secrets. It's just events. From the time I remember from being a little kid in the early 40s to now, all the places I've lived, all the places I've gone. I have two children and three grandchildren, and that's who I'm writing it for. And I would say to anybody out there that has been saying, like I said, for how many years, I've got to write all this down while I still can remember it. Well, I'll be 78 this week, and I better hurry, because you do start to lose some of these memories. And the ones long ago are much better than the ones right now, as far as remembering them. But I have a loose outline in my head, but it all has to do with the calendar, this, you know, what has happened in this life. And having a computer is great, because you can write it down and you can take it away later, or it causes you to think of things you hadn't thought of before and go back and add them. And so, you know, just go for it. Go do it. If it doesn't work, who cares?
Thanks. Monica, thoughts?
That's great advice. Well, one thing, it sounds like your mother, you know, I was thinking, listening to Russ before, and I could hear the energy in his voice that he's finally found a way to move forward when he said that he found his theme. But I want to caution that theme isn't the same thing as finding your structure, and structure is everything in a memoir. It's what makes a person feel as if they're reading a novelistic type story rather than somebody's diary. And it sounds like your mother has found her structure by travelogue, because you can jump from, you know, Istanbul to Siberia to London to Akron, Ohio, and you tell different stories from those places. And when you start doing that, what happens is you then begin to see that even in these disparate stories, you're finding a theme. You're saying, oh my gosh, this is about finding my faith, or this is about, you know, absent children, or this is about, you know, you find your theme that way. I had a student one time in a workshop, memoir workshop, who was trying to write about his very difficult relationship with his father, and we were doing one of those exercises where you just write down little bits, just not even full sentences, that this has to be in it, this has to be in it. And I said, you know, there's a lot of golf in there. And he, by the end of the workshop, he realized that he was going to write a memoir, and it was basically his life in golf clubs. So the nine iron chapter was about one thing, and then I don't play golf, so I don't know what the other ones are, but that's how he did it. So he found his structure, and that way he could work through his theme about dealing with a difficult father.
Mm.
It was fascinating.
This is Meredith. I'd like to add to that. So I think that Monica's memoir, When We Were the Kennedys, is a perfect example of finding structure by trusting the story mm-hmm. after story after story. So her memoir is very episodic. We move from one story to another. If you just look at a page, it's dialogue dominated. And what she's doing is allowing us to sort of watch a film that is scene after scene after scene, and those scenes accrue into the larger story. This is my life in this family. And so this idea of looking for structure and themes, I agree with Monica. I think themes emerge really far into the writing.
Exactly.
But I think initially, I think we can relieve ourselves of the burden of wondering, how do I put this thing together? Where do I start? What stories do I tell? If we trust that each story, each of those episodes is going to build into, just as films do. It's what we do when we watch films. We sit down and we're very intuitive about watching a scene of a couple in a kitchen, and then the camera closes out and we're watching a scene with a grandmother and a child in a car. And after a few scenes, we start putting the pieces together. And in the end, all of those episodes together make the story. And I think When We Were the Kennedys is just a perfect model for how much work storytelling can do.
Mm. So, Mom, thanks for calling in.
Like, yeah, it sounds like your mother, Jennifer, has hit on it, that her intention is to move story to story to story for her family, for her for her descendants.
And, well, and I, this is Genevieve. I just would jump on what Meredith said, and it sort of goes back to the legacy letter idea, which is a lot of writers can, potential writers can be very daunted by the idea of writing a book, but you can write small slices, like the, a letter or, you know, one episode or a story about one thing that happened to you when you were a child. And you just, if you start there and you just keep writing, you know, 3 pages, 4 pages, little short stories, eventually that will lead to a larger work. It's most important to just capture what you want to capture when you're feeling it or remembering it. And if it's writing in a letter, that's a great way too, to begin.
Right. We're going to move on. I'm going to go to Peter, who's calling from Rockport. And Peter, this is what you're talking about, small slices, right?
Yeah. When I got cancer in 2018, it kind of shut down my, you know, freelance writing. I had been doing stuff with Asia Times in Hong Kong. I was generating columns for Cape Cod Times. And especially once I got into the, oh, the meat of that therapy, including 6 weeks of six-hour-a-day IV antibiotic treatment, it really just took all of my memory and it just fudged it right out. So what I thought I would do is just, you know, episodically just record, you know, what was going on in terms of my therapy and my experience in rehab. And, you know, I just kept at it as an exercise. And lo and behold, I popped out on the other side in early 2019 and did some work again with Asia Times in Hong Kong on very, you know, crazy topic of cryptocurrency in China and geopolitics. What I was going to say just briefly is that, you know, this idea that you've got to force your way through anything when you're writing, I think that's counterproductive. Find something that you can do enjoyably in small pieces. And that's what I did.
Yeah, Peter, I'm so sorry to rush you along. We're tight on time. And I know Genevieve really wanted to talk about this, the power of writing when you're really going through something. And Peter, I'm so glad to hear you're doing better. But Genevieve, this Peter's point is a point that's important to you as well.
I just wanted to touch on the fact that, again, this is, I hate using this word because it's so overused right now, but unprecedented times, and that writing can be a very powerful way to help people get through trauma, get through grief, get through uncertainty, you know, second wave of pandemic, whatever it is, that it is a skill that most of us, even if we don't think we're good at it, we can use it to get the stream of consciousness, anxiety, all those thoughts out of our heads and onto paper. And who knows where that will go. But I did want to encourage people who are listening, if they're having a hard time, if they are, you know, worried and anxious and having perseverating thoughts, that get, you know, writing down, starting to write and write through your feelings and your stories and your fears can be a powerful therapy, as well as you never know what that, where that will go in terms of a memoir or a novel or a book of nonfiction. You just don't know. So
Peter,
tool.
Thank you for your call. And thank you for that, Genevieve. I'm going to try to squeeze one more in under the wire. Gary in Waterville, if you could be quick, that would be great.
Oh, my God. Being quick is not one of my fortes. Thank you so much for taking my call. I'm a new writer, wrote a book a couple years ago, edited it, and really had a lot of faith in it and still do. I sent query letters to 145 different literary agents. You would think I would give up, but I'm not going to. My question is, I took a hiatus from it for 8 months. I'm going to look at it again this winter. Is it a good idea to send the refinished book back to the literary agents that I already queried?
Genevieve, if someone completely reworks a book, is it okay to go back again?
It's always okay. And if just to give the caller some encouragement, I think we can all suffice to say that rejection is the name of the game. And there are many writers who have
wallpapered their offices or their bathrooms with their rejection letters.
Well, there you go, Gary. So good luck to you. And thank you, all of you, for this conversation that obviously needs an entire afternoon. Our guest today, Genevieve Morgan, a writer and editor. Her latest book, The Kinfolk, is part of the Five Stones trilogy. She's also the author of Undecided, Navigating Life and Learning After High School. Meredith Hall, the author of the new novel, Beneficence, which is out in just a couple weeks. Her memoir, Without a Map, was a New York Times bestseller. And Monica Wood, a novelist, memoirist, and playwright. Her books include When We Were the Kennedys and Ernie's Ark. Lucy Suchek ran the board. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Have a great weekend.